They knew, she realized. Not all, but some. She saw how the bishop of the southern parish avoided her gaze, a few beads of sweat forming on his wrinkled brow. Him in particular. She was right. There were no allies here. She walked slowly around the table, watching each stooped back flinch as she passed by. She wore no weapons today, having returned her grandfather's sword to its place in the library, but had little doubt she could snap every neck in this room should she choose. She halted behind the chair occupied by the reader-elect, and pointed at the ballots neatly piled at his side. "Give me those." His spotted, bony hands trembled as he complied, dropping the ballots and scrambling to retrieve them before managing to fumble them into her palm. "Deception is both sin and blessing," she quoted as she took the ballots from him. "The fifth book, the Book of Reason, fast becoming her favourite." She turned and walked slowly back to the alcove, ballots in hand. "The paths set for us by the Father are many, and their course is ever winding. At every turn, the loved find themselves presented with a plethora of choices as their paths fork, split by war or famine, love and betrayal. To walk the varied paths of life without deception is impossible." She stopped before the alcove, holding the ballots to one of the candles, letting the flame consume half their length, before tossing them onto the stone floor where they continued to burn. Soon no more than a swirl of black cinders. "But," she told the bishops with a smile, now staring in outrage or horror, "the Father forgives the lie spoken in kindness, or service to a greater purpose." She stood, the smile fading from her lips, waiting for a single voice to be raised in dissent. But they all just sat and stared, stoking her anger with their dumb inaction. This venal church collaborated with murderers, she knew, allied themselves with the servants of an enemy that brought slaughter and slavery to this land. "The people of the city would hang you all from the towers of this cathedral if I wished it. I won their love, whilst you cowered here and prayed for miracles that never came. With sword and bow, I won their love." One word to Arentis, and it would be done. The bishops dragged outside, charges read, as the people looked on, and she fired their rage with a few well-chosen truths. They were all killers now, save the children, and even they were hardened to the sight of death. There would be no protest, no hand raised to stop her, and she would have what the priest once made her lust for, a new church to be moulded into her father's vision. My mad father's vision. The thought dispelled her anger, replacing it with a weary realization. They had lost so much, but the church had endured for centuries, and this land would not heal if she ripped open yet more wounds. The sleeping ancient stirred, snuffling awake with a bleary-eyed glance around the room. "Lunch!" he demanded, thumping his walking stick on the table. Reva moved to the ancient, smiling down at his reproving scowl. "And who might you be, good bishop?"
"I," he began, drawing himself up, "am the holy bishop of—"
He frowned in confusion, his shoulders slumping a little, licking his lips.
"The bishop of—"
"The Riverland Parish,"
the bishop at his side supplied in a tense whisper.
"Yes!"
The ancient bishop brightened, fixing Reva with an imperious glare.
"I am the bishop of the Riverland Parish, and I demand my lunch!"
"You shall have it," Reva assured him with a bow. "And more besides." She moved to the door, pausing to cast an expansive gesture at the other bishops. "For your colleagues have voted you holy reader to the Church of the World Father. Please accept my heartfelt congratulations, reader, and be assured of House Muster's most pious loyalty. I await your first sermon with the keenest interest." The sword room was mostly bare now, the once full racks empty of blades, save a few too highly set on the wall to be easily reached. She spent an hour in practice with her grandfather's sword, dancing her dance with the heavy blade whirling and slicing, her muscles straining. "I could watch you do that for hours," Reva stopped in mid-pirouette, finding Alornis standing in the doorway, charcoal-stained fingers still clutching her leather case. "I doubt you'd have liked the view a few days ago," Reva said, massaging her back. Alornis' gaze became somber. "It was bad, I know. So much of the city destroyed. On the march here I saw things, things I felt I had to draw." She tapped her case. "I thought putting them on paper might get them out of my head. But still they linger. The severed heads raining down. The Valerian's defiant glare as he was led to the block." "They should," Reva told her. "Will you be coming to Varenshold? There are rooms aplenty here if you wish to stay. And I'm sure Lady Velis would like the company." Alornis smiled but shook her head. "Alusius and Master Benrel. I have to find them." She hesitated, then came into the room, eyes widening in appreciation of the paintings on the upper walls. The swordsmen in their various poses. This was done by a skilled hand. "At the cost of my great-grandfather's coin, no doubt. He seems to have been a little too free with it, according to Velis's records. Perhaps why he lost so many wars to the Asraelans. I find governing a fief to be mostly a matter of coin." Alornis's brow creased as she looked at Reva, shaking her head in faint wonder. So changed in such a short time. Reva found her scrutiny hard to bear and turned away, hefting the sword. "You," she told it, "are just too heavy." "What happened to your old one?" Alornis asked. "That was a thing of beauty." Standing over Arkan's body, her arm moving in a ceaseless, deadly arc, the rage spilling from her lips in a meaningless torrent. "I broke it." She raised her gaze to the few remaining blades on the higher racks, picking out an Asraelian sword somehow missed by the servants, sent to ransack the place for arms. "You can help me find another." She cupped her hands to create a stirrup, and Alornis placed a foot in it, reaching up as Reva hoisted her, snatching the sword from the rack before slipping from her grip and falling. Reva caught her, holding her tight as she laughed, drawing back to meet her gaze. "My brother says Lady Velis was once a spy in King Janus's service," Alornis told her. "I know. She has been many things. Well, I think she's lovely." She stood on tiptoe to press a kiss to Reva's forehead. "I'm happy for you." She turned, retrieved her case of sketches and left. Reva closed her eyes, feeling the warmth of the kiss fade from her skin. Her gaze was always far too keen, foolish to imagine she wouldn't know. She hefted the sword, drawing the blade free of the scabbard, finding it old but not rusted. The edge notched, but not so bad it couldn't be sharp and keen. "So," she said, putting the scabbard aside and assuming a fighting stance. "Let's see if you're a better fit. We have much work to do." Chapter 5 Lerna. The horse was a gift from the Airhill, 14 hands at the shoulder and white from nose to tail, save for a tuft of black hair between her ears. Lerna had found the Airhill woman they called Wisdom waiting with the horse when she emerged from her tent that morning. She proffered the reins with a surprisingly well-executed formal bow. "She has a name?" Lerna asked her. "It translates as an unseen arrow as she runs through snow and wind, Highness," Wisdom replied in her perfect realm tongue. "My people are not known for their brevity." "Arrow it is," Lerna said, scratching the mare's nose and drawing forth a faint snort. "She misses her rider," Wisdom said. "He fell before the city. I feel you may be able to mend her heart." "My thanks," Lerna returned her bow. "Will you ride with me today? I greatly wish to know more of your people." There was a somewhat sardonic lilt to the woman's voice as she replied, "Have you not already read every book in your library concerning the Airhill, Highness?" "I am increasingly aware that the sagacity of books is limited in comparison to experience." "As you wish." Wisdom turned and vaulted onto the back of her own horse, looking down at Lerna in expectation. "My people ride now." Iltis and Benton were obliged to scramble onto their own horses as Lerna mounted up and trotted off with Wisdom. They rode to the eastern edge of the camp, where the Airhill host was already in motion. the various war bands galloping off seemingly at random. No neatly ordered ranks and columns here. Although every rider seemed to move with a purpose, and she noticed how the host took on a definite, if loose, formation as they crested the eastern hills, and entered the low-lying fields beyond. "Good country for horses," Lerna commented to Wisdom an hour or so shy of midday. The ride had been hard, but not exhausting, her journey through the Lonak Dominion having left her well adapted to long hours in the saddle. Plus, she found her new mount something of a delight, faster than poor old Sable, and less fractious than Surefoot. "Still too many hills for my people's liking," Wisdom replied, taking a long pull from her waterskin. "And not an elk to be had since we came here. Some of the young ones are chafing at it. For true adulthood only comes when you take your first elk." Lerna looked at the riders around them, noting how their eyes strayed constantly to her face, but displayed none of the awe shown by the realm folk. If anything, she detected a discomfort in finding themselves in such proximity. "You call it the dark," Wisdom said, somehow sensing the question she was about to ask. "We call it simply Exilla, power in your tongue." "Not one I possess," Lerna pointed out. "It doesn't matter. We know of it, but few of us are visited with such gifts. Those that are find themselves shunned, I assume." Wisdom voiced a faint laugh. "Do not judge us by the standards of your people, Highness. Those with gifts are not shunned, but they are respected. The greater the power, the greater the respect. And respect can grow into fear if the power is great enough. As yet, there is not a story or a song in our history that tells of a power greater than that used to heal you. They worry what it might mean. Do you?" Wisdom's age-cracked lips formed into a smile, small but rich in sympathy. "No, great and terrible queen. I know full well what it means." Sanish Poltar came trotting up on his tall, piebald stallion, offering Lerna a cautious nod. "Scouts say many men to the south," the war chief told Wisdom. "The queen stays here while we go look." "I think not," Lerna said, fixing the air hill with a bright smile. "Tau Lord says to keep you safe above all others," Sanish Poltar replied. "And we are bound to him, not you." "And I am bound to neither." She tugged on Arrow's reins, pointing her nose southward and kicking her into a gallop. The Airhill soon overtook her, of course, though she was gratified by the hard glare Sanish Poltar shot at her as he galloped past. Iltis and Benton closed in on either side as they trailed in the rider's wake, Lerna finding herself blinking away dust as the sun rose to dry the earth. They crested a low rise a half hour later, reining to a halt beside the war chief as he surveyed the shallow vale beyond. To the east and west, his outriders galloped forth in a perfectly coordinated envelopment, whilst the bulk of his riders stayed put on the low ridge. She noted most had notched an arrow to their hornbows. Sanish Poltar sat in silence, scanning the vale with a hawkish intent. Lerna followed his gaze, seeing nothing beyond empty country. "How many men were seen?" she asked the war chief. "Less than were at the city," he replied without turning. "More than we have." "Another Valerian force sent by Tokrev to raid the south," she wondered. Master Markin had searched through the dead general's mind, revealing what he had described as a swamp of vain ambition and petty jealousy, but no inkling of another large force nearby. Could they have landed early, she wondered, Tokrev sending for the second wave to speed the conquest. Sanish Poltar straightened in his saddle and pointed. It was another few seconds before Lerna saw them, a small band of cavalry galloping into the vale, then drawing up short at the sight of so many horsemen on the skyline ahead. They fanned out, still too distant to make out any details, one of their number galloping off to disappear over the lip of the valley. Next to Lerna, Wisdom unhooked her bow from the saddle and notched an arrow. Old as she is, Lerna thought, and she still expected to fight. The horsemen in the valley sat waiting for several minutes, Lerna thinking it odd that none had yet drawn a sword. Sanish Poltar's gaze shifted once more as a tall banner appeared over the rim of the valley, bobbing at the head of a column of infantry led by a man on horseback. They marched into the valley in close ranks, making no move to assume battle formation. Lerna realizing why as the motif on the banner became clear, a tower rising from a wave-tossed ocean. She laughed and kicked Arrow forward, ignoring Iltis's appalled protest as he galloped along behind. The marching column came to a halt as she approached, sergeants barking commands, unheeded by men who stared at her in open wonder. She made for the rider at the head of the column, raising her hand and smiling warmly. He climbed down from his saddle, not without some difficulty, and slowly lowered himself to one knee. "What a welcome sight you make, my lord," Lerna told him. Tau Lord Albera looked up at her with a pale but intent expression, raising himself with effort as she leapt down from her saddle, coming to him with hands outstretched. "Highness," he said, his voice hoarse and back stiff as he lowered his lips to her hands, eyes hardly leaving her face as he straightened. "We heard so many terrible stories. I'm greatly pleased to find one at least to be false." He turned, raising an arm towards the men at his back, as more came marching into sight. "I present the Army of the Southern Shore, 20,000 horse and foot, ready to march and die at the Queen's word." "They sent about 5,000 men into the southern counties," the Tower Lord reported to the Council of Captains that evening. Lerna had been obliged to order him to sit, as the man's exhaustion and evident pain threatened to tip him over at any moment. He sat on a camp stool, both arms cradled in his lap, the left heavily bandaged, and the right hanging loose from a drooping shoulder. Lerna had offered to take him to Weaver, but the Tower Lord's shocked expression was enough for her to let the matter drop. "The slave soldiers, mostly," Albera went on. Lerna knew this to be a man promoted through merit rather than blood, and his voice held the broad vowels singular to the common folk of southern Azrael. "Plus about 1,000 cavalry. And slavers, of course. Laid waste to several villages before word reached the tower. I marched out with the South Guard, and what men I could levy from the coast. Caught them as they were finishing up a slaughter at Draver's Wharf, on the lower reaches of the Cold Iron. Had a sense they were expecting a less speedy response. Unsurprising, since I should be dead by rights." Albera paused to give a wan smile. "Made 'em pay for it. The numbers were about even, so it was a bloody business. But we made 'em pay." "Prisoners?" Valen asked. "The slave soldiers don't surrender. But we took a few cavalry and slavers. I gave them to the people we freed. Probably should have just hung them. But blood pays for blood." "Quite so, my lord," Lerna told him. "Please, continue." "Been gathering men and training them best I could since then. Word came 2 weeks ago telling of the Meldinian fleet, sailing up the Cold Iron, so I judged it time to move north." "You judged correctly," Lerna said. "However, you find us short of supplies." "Supplies I've got, Highness. My lady wife has family connections on both sides of the Arenian. Seems some Alpiran merchants were willing to trade with us. The terms were hardly favourable, and the South Tower treasury stands just about empty. But since the Emperor lifted the embargo, I suppose they couldn't pass up a chance at profit." Lerna saw Lord Verniers raise his head at that. He was a deliberately obscure presence in the army, keen to avoid conversation with any save herself and Valen, though she made it plain he was welcome at all meetings, and free to record all words spoken. The shield had made something of a fuss of him in the aftermath of the battle, proclaiming him "the scribe who killed a general," with a hearty laugh echoed by his crew. Verniers, however, seemed to shun any rewards his heroism might offer, though he had persisted in requests for a private interview. "Your emperor seems better disposed to our realm, my lord," she told him. The chronicler squirmed a little as the captains turned to regard him, voicing only a short response. "So it seems, Highness. Do you think he knows of the Valerian's great scheme? Could that be the reason for this change of heart?" "The Emperor's mind is never easily gauged, Highness. But anything that might injure the Valerian Empire is likely to please him greatly. They have been our enemy far longer than yours." "We should send an ambassador," Valen said. "Forge an alliance, if possible." "All in good time, my lord," Lerna said, turning again to Albera. "I'll pen a letter for Lady Albera, giving assurance that any debts incurred in purchasing more supplies will be settled in full at the close of hostilities. She is free to agree suitable terms of interest with any and all merchants. In the meantime, half her available supplies will be shipped to Altor to succor the Cumbrelian people through the winter. The other half will come to us. Her finger traced across the map to a town on the Renfaling coast. At Warnsclave, where we rendezvous with our Meldinian allies in 15 days. As for now, my lord, please, get some rest. She spent the journey to Warnsclave travelling with a different contingent each day. One with Lady Reaver's Cumbrelians, the next with a regiment of miners from the Reaches, the third with the South Guard. Every face displayed either awe, fascination, or in the case of Lord Norta's Free Company, a fierce and unhesitant loyalty. "The departed have blessed you, my queen," one man called out to her as she drew up alongside Lord Norta, the shout soon taken up by his fellow fighters.
"Silence in the ranks,"
the company sergeant barked, an athletic young man with long hair and a sword strapped across his back in the manner of the Sixth Order. "Apologies, Highness," Lord Norta offered as they set off. "They're not easy to control at the best of times, and it's not like I can flog any." "No, my lord," Lerna replied. "You certainly cannot." She found it strange that they rode in silence for much of the morning. The boy she remembered as the son of her father's first minister had rarely been quiet. A braggart, and sometimes a bully, quick to taunt and even quicker to cry when his taunts were returned. She saw none of that boy in the bearded warrior at her side, a small smile playing on his lips as he watched his great cat bounding alongside. "I intended to offer you restoration of your father's lands and titles," she told him when the silence became trying. "However, Lord Valen advised you had no interest in such honours." "Never did my father much good, did they, Highness?" he replied, affably enough, but with a slight edge to his tone. "I was not privy to the king's decision in that matter," she said. "I believe it to have been regrettable."
"I harbour no bitterness, Highness.
Time has dimmed my memory of a man I recall I loved almost as much as I hated. In any case, without his death, I would not have been set on the course that led me to my wife, my children, and the home I hunger for. And the faith teaches us to accept the gifts brought by fate."
"You still hold to the faith?"
"I left the order, Highness, not the faith. My brother may have lost his in the desert somewhere, but mine still lingers on. Though my wife longs for me to abandon it in favour of the sun and the moon." He gave a soft laugh, and she could hear his homesickness in it. "The only thing we ever quarrel about, in truth." They rested at midday, Lerna climbing down from Arrow's back and drawing up in alarm as a woman rushed from the ranks of the Free Company with a dagger in both hands. Iltis's sword came free of its scabbard in a blur, but rather than launching herself at Lerna, the woman sank to her knees, head bowed with her twin daggers raised high.
"My queen," she said in a tremulous gasp, "I beg you to bless these blades so they might do your work."
The rest of the freed fighters immediately dropped to their knees, all drawing weapons and holding them aloft. This was clearly a ceremony planned on the march, one she judged Lord Norta knew nothing of from his weary and slightly disgusted expression. "Never be afraid of a little theatre." Lerna took a breath and placed a kindly smile on her lips as she moved to the kneeling woman, recognizing her as the slight figure who had been first to take up the cry at Altor. "What is your name?" she asked her.
"Furla, my queen,"
the woman stammered, not looking up. Lerna gently took hold of the woman's trembling hands. "Lower your blades, sister," she told her. "Stand up. Look at me." Furla slowly looked up, eyes wide as they drank in the sight of her face, coming to her feet as Lerna kept hold of her hands. "Who did you lose?" she asked her.
My daughter,"
the slight woman breathed, tears flowing from her eyes. "Born out of wedlock, shunned and called a bastard her whole life, but always so sweet. They dashed her brains out with a rock." She sagged as the sobs took her, sinking to her knees. Lerna pulled her close as she wept, her dagger still gripped tight. "I cannot bless this woman's blades," she told the fighters, many now weeping openly, "for she blesses me. You all do. I am your blade, and you are mine." She raised the still-sobbing Furla to her feet, leading her back to the company's ranks.
Accordingly, I hereby name you as the Realm Guard's 60th Regiment of Foot, to be known hereafter as the Queen's Daggers. They parted before her as she released Furla, the woman instantly falling to her knees once more, her comrades all reaching out to touch tentative hands to Lerna's gown as she moved among them, fierce devotion on every face. I cannot become drunk on this, she thought, smiling and touching her hands to heads lowered in supplication. The lure of it is too great.
Toil, blood, and justice!
The cry began unbidden, a spontaneous shout from a faceless voice in the kneeling ranks, repeated over and over as they stabbed the air with their assorted weapons.
Toil, blood, and justice!
Lerna felt the seduction of it sweep through her, the power of it, the knowledge that these few hundred wounded souls would die for her in an instant. She was on the verge of surrendering to it completely when something gave her pause. A single face, not stricken in adoration. Lord Norta stood beside his horse, running a hand over the head of the great cat, crouched at his side. His faint look of disgust, now replaced with one of deep and obvious disapproval. She met with Brother Canis in the evening, alone since Valen seemed keen to avoid his former brother, an attitude shared by many in the army's ranks. Even Orenna, who struck Lerna as a woman of great practicality, had begged leave for an early night, rather than remain to greet the brother's arrival. Fear of the dark does not fade in an instant, Lerna concluded. The newly revealed brother of the Seventh Order sat at stiff attention on the camp stool, refusing the offer of refreshment with a polite shake of his head. For all his evident hardness and renown as a warrior, there was a definite timidity to this compact, war-hardened man, a shift in his eyes as if wary of attack at any moment. So long living in the shadows, she thought, the light of day can be as frightening as the dark. My brothers and sisters ask me to offer thanks, Highness, he said, for your consideration. A queen has care for all her subjects, my lord. If it please you, Highness, my preference is to be addressed as brother. I am a man of the faith in all things. As you wish. Lerna reached for the scroll he had handed her on arrival, a complete list of his order's members and their various gifts. You have a brother who can see the past? Brother Lucin's gift is limited, Highness. His vision confined only to whatever location he finds himself in. Lerna nodded, frowning at the next description on the list. And this Sister Meriel can truly pull lightning from the air? Not exactly, Highness. She can exude a power, an energy from her hands. In darkness or shadow, it can seem like lightning. The gift is very draining, fatal if overused. Can she kill with it? He hesitated, then gave a short nod. Then she and her gift are greatly welcome in this army. Lerna read through the rest of the list, glancing up at him with a raised eyebrow. I find there is one name missing, brother. His discomfort visibly deepened, but his gaze remained steady, and his tone held no note of compromise. My gift cannot be revealed, Highness, by strict order of my aspect. She was tempted to remind him the faith was subject to the crown, but decided against it. There is too much of use in what he brings me, and this is not a good time for conflict with the faith, especially when they continue to hide so much. I spent so many years in search of your kind, she said, putting the list aside, even risking death in the mountains to seek evidence of your existence. And yet it seems all I had to do was await the tide of history, and I would be deluged with more evidence than I could ever wish. Brother Canis confined his reply to a cautious nod, his gaze averted as she continued. It must have been difficult, living in concealment for so long, lying to your brothers for years on end. The faith required it, Highness. I had no choice in the matter. But yes, it was a hard duty. Lord Valen tells me you are the most loyal subject my father could ever wish for, that your enthusiasm for the Desert War was great, so much so he thought your heart broken when it all came to naught. Aspect Graylin was very precise in the role he wished me to play. My devotion to the faith so strong, he felt it best masked as devotion to the king. But my brother was right. My enthusiasm for the war was true. Inflamed by my aspect, who told me it was the key to securing the future of the faith. For reasons of his own, he didn't tell me how that security would be achieved, or my brother's fate. I always thought Aspect Grelian's reasoning to be infallible. He never steered me to the wrong course. He never made mistakes. Have you heard from him since the capital fell?
Sadly, no, Highness.
Canis lowered his head, his voice dulling with sorrow. Brother Lerniel has a facility for hearing the thoughts of those he has met, even over great distances. We know the Aspect had taken refuge in the Erlish with a band of free fighters. The details are vague since Lerniel's gift is limited. At Altor he took a wound to the head, waking 2 days later with a great scream. I hoped his words no more than a symptom of a damaged mind, but he has healed much since, and his gift tells him there are no more thoughts to be heard from Aspect Grelian. Seeing the brother's evident grief, she reached out to clasp his hand. My commiserations, brother. He stirred in discomfort, forcing a smile. Does he fear me? One of the names on his list apparently had some facility for peering into the future, and she wondered what revelations Canis might be privy to, recalling Lord Norta's grim visage and Wisdom's words from the first day on the march. I know full well what it means. During Brother Harlech's questioning, she said, moving back, the Valerian woman we took at Altor spoke of an ally. Lord Valin seems to think you may be able to elaborate on her meaning. Brother Harlech has already told you all we know, Highness. It resides in the beyond and plots our destruction. We know not why. If it exists in the place beyond death, does not that suppose it was once alive? It was once a man or a woman? It does, Highness. But as yet, no member of any order has divined how it came to be what it is, nor what malign agency could have twisted it into such evil. There must be records, ancient texts describing its origin. The Third Order has spent centuries gathering the oldest words written by human hand, paying considerable sums for scraps of parchment or shards of clay. The ally is there, but only ever as a shadow, unexplained catastrophe or murder committed at the behest of a dark and vengeful spirit. Sorting truth from myth is often a fruitless task. His words stirred her faultless memory, calling forth a line from Lord Vernier's Cantos of Gold and Dust. Truth is the scholar's greatest weapon, but often also his doom. She decided a private audience with the Alperian chronicler was overdue. "Am I to assume," she said to Canis, "that your order now requires a new aspect?" "There are formalities to the choosing, as you know, Highness. Until such time as a conclave can be convened, my order remains without an aspect. However, my brothers and sisters have affirmed their willingness to accede to my leadership in the interim." His gaze became steady again. "Which brings me to another matter. The people from the Reaches?" "Indeed, Highness. My order has lost many brothers and sisters in this war. Our ranks grow thin." "And you would take these others into the order against their loud objections?" "Lord Valin has been very clear on their thoughts in this regard. They follow him, not you." "My order is the shield of the gifted. Without us, they would all have perished generations ago." "And yet, you continue to hide yourselves for decades whilst they face discovery and death at the hands of the Fourth Order." "A necessary subterfuge. Most of us are discovered at an early age, gifted children born to gifted parents and long-time members of the Order. Not all are so fortunate, or grow to be kind of heart or immune to greed. For all our power, we have human souls like any other. Before Aspect Tendris's ascension, those gifted found by the Fourth Order would be judged to see if they were suitable for inclusion within our ranks. Whether they joined us or not was their choice. Not, I assume, if they stood outside the faith." "The Seventh Order is of the faith, Highness. That cannot change." "Do I have another Tendris here?" she pondered, seeing the implacable belief in his gaze. She had often wondered why her father didn't have the ever-troublesome aspect of the Fourth Order quietly poisoned by one of his many hidden agents. But even the old schemer hadn't been immune to the faith, or ignorant of the power it wielded. "This is a free realm," she told Canis. "That also cannot change. You may speak to the gifted from the Reaches and offer them a place in your order, However, if they refuse, you will let the matter drop, and I will not hear it raised again during my reign, which I expect to be of considerable duration. Unless your sister—" She consulted the list again, for show, since she had memorized the contents at the first glance. "Velia scries a different future, of course." "My sister's visions are infrequent," he replied, "and require considerable interpretation. When it comes to your highness, so far she sees little." "And what little does she see?" He straightened, once more seemingly a warrior rather than an aspect in waiting, face set in the knowledge of coming battle. "Fire," he said. "She sees only fire." She travelled with the Sjorda the next day, choosing to walk as they did. Lady Dyrrhenna accompanied her to act as interpreter, a somewhat redundant role since few of the forest folk seemed inclined to speak to them, most, in fact, keen to avoid looking in their direction. She could see the lady's grief at this, the way her smile faltered as the hawk-faced warriors looked away or grunted clipped responses to her approaches. In contrast, their attitude to Lerna seemed more one of curious bafflement rather than fear. "Healing touch very rare in the forest," Hera Drakil told her, the only one of his people to stay at Dyrrhenna's side for more than a few steps, and even then she sensed a tense reluctance in the war chief, as if every step was a test of courage. "Not known for many generations." "Do your people have books?" Lerna asked, her thoughts straying to the Malesa's vast library under the mountain. "Records of the time before the Marilim Sil?" "Books," the war chief frowned. "Virosra San Elosra Dural," Dyrrhenna told him. Lerna Sjorda was markedly less accomplished than her Lonak, but she had enough for a rough translation. "The words that cage the spirit." "No," the Sjorda told Lerna. "No books for the Sjorda. Not now, not in the before times. All is spoken and remembered. Only the spoken word is true." Lerna saw Dyrrhenna hesitate, then say something in the Sjorda tongue. Too fast to easily translate, and rich in words beyond Lerna's knowledge. Whatever their meaning, the words were enough to darken Hera Drakil's expression, and he turned away, striding off through the disordered ranks of his people. "Is he offended?" Lerna asked Dyrrhenna. The lady's face was drawn in sadness as she watched the war chief walk away. "Only the spoken word is true," she said. "I told him the truth. He didn't like it." The army swelled as it moved east, hidden bands of fugitives and escaped slaves emerging from forest and cave to join them or beg food. Lerna made sure all were provided for, even those reluctant to join their ranks, though these were few in number. There were numerous Realm Guard stragglers among the new recruits, eager for a return to regiments that were now mostly extinct. At her request, Brother Canis had stepped down as Lord Marshal of the Realm Guard contingent, though his decision had caused some discord in the ranks. Regardless of any dark affliction, many still saw him as a savior, the fearless commander who led them to deliverance after calamitous defeat. Others were less accepting, mainly the men who had served under Lady Reva at Cumbrail, and the fugitives found on the march, leading to a fair amount of loud quarrelling and even a few fistfights. A formal delegation of sergeants had gone to Valin requesting Canis's reinstatement, and the battle lord had been obliged to calm their anger by elevating one of their own in the brother's place, a veteran sergeant of stocky build with a face like scarred leather. "Sergeant Travik, Highness," he said, going to one knee before her the day she joined them on the march. "Late of the 16th Regiment of Foot." "Ah, the Black Bears, as I recall," Lerna said, gesturing for Benton to bring her the item he had procured from Brother Holland's travelling armoury. Travik blinked at her in surprise. "Yes, Highness. Your memory does you credit." "Thank you. However, I must advise you that your etiquette, by contrast, is sadly lacking." The veteran lowered his head, frowning in embarrassment. "Forgive me, Highness. Not used to such things." "Hardly an excuse," Lerna said, holding out her hand as Benton handed her the sword, an Asraelin blade, as befit the occasion. "For a sword of the realm to refer to himself as a sergeant, I profess myself shocked." His head snapped up in alarm, eyes widening at the sight of the sword. "Lord Marshal Altravik," she said, reversing the weapon to lay it across her forearm, handle first. "Do you accept this sword offered by your queen?" Behind Travik, the realm guard was stirring in their ranks, less neat and well-shaved as she remembered, but all uniformly hardened and possessed of the air of dangerous men. "Dangerous I can use," she decided. "Let them fight each other if they must, as long as they fight harder against the Valerians."
I do, Highness,"
Travik stammered.
"Then take it, my lord, and do get up."
His meaty scarred hand closed on the sword handle, and he rose, holding it up with an expression of blank astonishment. "It is my wish that the Realm Guard be reordered, Lord Marshal," she went on, recapturing his attention and making him snap back into a soldierly posture, spine straight and eyes averted.
"Whatever my queen commands."
"A respect for the past is a good thing, but we cannot allow it to obstruct our purpose. Many proud regiments now retain mere fragments of their former complement, or were wiped out completely. If I calculate correctly, there are little over 6,000 Realm Guard under your command, many of them holding to regimental ties that no longer have meaning. Of those regiments still remaining, only 3 can truly be called such. And even they are greatly reduced in number. You will bring these up to full complement and divide the remaining men into 3 new regiments, their names and banners to be determined by the men, subject to my approval. Also, you will add Lord Norta's company to the Realm Guard roster as the 60th Regiment of Foot." She turned her gaze on the ranks of the Realm Guard. The regimental loyalty of the Realm soldiery was legendary, and she saw open dismay on many faces. "When this war is won," she told them, raising her voice, "I give you my word, the Realm Guard will be rebuilt, and any wishing to rejoin their former regiments will be granted leave to do so. For now, we have a war to win, and sentiment will not aid us in that endeavour." Lord Travik barked a command, his sergeant's voice a thunderclap, sending every soldier to one knee, heads bowed. "The Realm Guard is yours, Highness," he said, "to forge as you will, and," he added, his voice loud and carrying to every soldier in his command, "if I hear any man say differently, I'll flog him down to the bone." The walls of Warnsclave had been neglected for many years, the long period of peace heralded by her father's ascension making them an expensive irrelevance to successive town factors. Velen opined they had been strong enough to repel one Valerian assault, but ultimately proved too weak to withstand another. They were rent in several places, great gashes torn into the stone from ground to parapet, offering an all-too-clear view of what lay beyond as Arrow brought Lerna closer. "Nothing remains, Highness," Lord Adal had reported that morning, having returned from reconnaissance. "Not a house, and not a soul." Her faint hope the Northguard had exaggerated dwindled with every tread of Arrow's hooves. The ash and rubble visible through the breaches told of utter destruction. She found Valen waiting at the ruined gate, expression grim.
"The harbour, Highness," he said.
The harbour waters were cloudy with silt and scummed by oil leaking from the scuttled boats of the town's fishing fleet. But she could see them clearly enough. A great cluster of pale ovals, tinged green by the algae in the water so they resembled a mound of grapes after the harvest. Lerna swept her gaze around the remnants of what she recalled as a lively if somewhat smelly town. Grimy, in fact. The people speaking in a coarse accent, more ready to meet her gaze than in Varenshold, and less ready to bow. But they had been happy to see her, she remembered, cheering as she rode through, offering babies to kiss, and tossing flower petals in her path. She had come to open an almshouse, paid for by the Crown and staffed by the Fifth Order. She had found no trace of it in the journey to the harbour, just street after street of piled brick and scorched timber.
"They chained them together," Valen said. "Pushed the first in, and the rest followed. Perhaps 400. The only survivors from when they took the town, I assume."
"Didn't want to be burdened with slaves on the march north," Lord Adal commented. His voice had the clipped tones of well-controlled emotion, but Lerna saw how the muscles of his jaw bunched as he stared down at the water.
"March north, my lord?" she asked him.
Lady Dorena stepped forward with a bow, her face showing the kind of paleness that only came from the deepest chill. I believe I may have useful intelligence, Highness.
It's gone?
Lerna asked her a short while later.
She had ordered Muriel to fetch the lady a hot beverage, and she sat in her tent now, small hands clutching a bowl of warm milk.
Valin stood by, regarding Dorena with evident concern, already having voiced his disquiet at her using her gift.
"Alto cost you much," he said. "Flying free again so soon was unwise."
"I am a soldier in this army," the lady replied with a shrug,
"like any other, and my gift is my weapon."
Lerna forced herself to stillness as the air seemed to thicken between them, knowing much was being left unsaid. But still, they knew each other's mind as if the words had been shouted.
"Whilst I know so little of what lies behind his eyes."
"Burnt to ash from end to end," Dorena confirmed.
"The Earlish is dead, Highness."
Lerna remembered the day Lord Altelnar had come begging her father to lift the strictures on harvesting timber from the Earlish. How he had been sent scurrying from the council chamber, face red with humiliation.
"The Earlish is the birthplace of this realm," Janus had told a cringing Altelnar as he signed another decree reallocating yet more land formerly owned by the Minister of Royal Works.
"The cradle of my rule, not to be grubbed over by the likes of you."
Altelnar and the Earlish, she reflected. Now both nothing but ash. Strange he should sacrifice himself for me after so many years of father's torments.
"And this army moving across the Renfalen border towards Varenthold?" she asked Dorena.
"Could you gauge their number?"
"Some are over 5,000, Highness, mostly on horseback."
"Darnell calls his knights," Lerna mused. "He'll certainly need them before long."
"I don't think so, Highness," Dorena said. "There's a soul among them, burning bright but red. I've seen it before, when I flew over the Earlish. I'm certain it was fighting the Valerians there."
Lerna nodded, recalling a night spent in a Renfalen holdfast. Only months ago, but it seemed like years now.
"There are many," Bandus had said, "who find the prospect of being ruled by that man a stain on their honour."
"And the filth who slaughtered the people in the harbour?" she asked.
"Any trace of them in your flight, my lady?"
She sensed a certain resignation in Dorena's response, a grim acceptance of the consequences of the intelligence she provided.
4,000 or so, Highness. 20 miles northwest, most on foot."
Lerna turned to Valin.
"My lord, please ask Sanish Poltar for the fastest horse the Airhill can provide, and an escort for a royal messenger. They will seek out this Renfalen army and divine their identity and intentions."
He gave a shallow bow.
"Yes, Highness."
"I will see to the recovery of the bodies from the harbour, and ensure they are given to the fire with all due ceremony, whilst you will take every rider we have and hunt down their murderers. And I expect to hear no more word of prisoners."
Chapter 6 Valin. "We will make an ending, you and I."
"My lord."
Valin snapped back to the present, at Adal's words, finding the Northguard commander mounted alongside, his eyes narrowed in shrewd appraisal.
"My men found some stragglers 2 miles north," Adal said. "Close to exhaustion, and not having eaten for days. Seems likely the rest won't be in much better shape."
Valin nodded, turning away from the man's scrutiny, looking to the west where the Airhill were galloping off to perform the encircling maneuver he had ordered that morning. He experienced a moment's disorientation as the plainsman crested a rise and disappeared from view, an increasingly familiar sensation mingling frustration with disappointment. There was no song to accompany the ride of the Airhill, as there had been no song to guide him when Lerna was found healed in body, if not apparently in spirit. Nor had there been any song to accompany Orvin's hanging of the Valerian prisoners at her command, nor any music now as he turned back to Adal and ordered him to take his men to cover the east. He saw no reluctance in Adal's demeanour before he turned his mount about and rode off, but there was uncertainty there, even a faint concern. He wondered if the Northguard's animosity had worn thinner since Ultor, that if there wasn't some actual regard for his Tower Lord these days. But where once such things were so easily divined, now there was only continual uncertainty. Is this what it is to live without a gift? He recalled those brief years when his song had fallen silent.
his refusal to heed it leaving him bereft, without guidance. It had been hard to be so rudderless in a sea of chaos and war. This, however, was much worse, because now there was the chill, the bone-deep cold that had seeped into him in the Allies' domain, and lingered on here in this world of myriad paths, all seemingly so dark. And the words, of course, those words that hounded him from the beyond. "We will make an ending, you and I." Norta trotted up beside him, Snowdance bounding on ahead, as ever enlivened by the prospect of blood. "You belong with your regiment," Velen told him. "Davin has them well in hand," his brother replied. "Truth be told, I'd be grateful if you'd ask the Queen to promote him in my stead. Boundless hatred and bloodlust are not easily tolerated for long. They'll need firm leadership and a restraining hand." Norta raised an eyebrow. "Is that sentiment shared by the Queen, brother? If so, I'd be greatly surprised." Velen didn't respond. Recalling his joy on seeing her that day at Altor, as the boat carried her across the river, the blossoming relief as she stepped ashore. The song's absence was a physical pain, and she seemed to offer an antidote, a single point of certainty, burned but glorious. "How could I ever have imagined she might have fallen?" he had thought, sinking to his knees before her. But as the days passed, and the army's evident love for their queen swelled by the mile, he had felt the song's absence ever more keenly. "She raises so many questions, and yet seems to ask none herself." He saw great differences from the girl he had met in that palace corridor so many years ago, the unbridled ambition forged into something new and more troubling. She hungered for power. Now what does she hunger for? "My people met with our brother," Norta said. He always referred to the gifted from Nerin's Point in this way, as if they were a nation unto themselves. "As per the Queen's request, they told him no, as expected." He paused. "Have you spoken to him? Since his little revelation?" Velen shook his head, keen to avoid discussion on this topic. The questions it raised were even more troubling than those surrounding the Queen. "Seventh Order or not," Norta went on, "faith or not, he's still our brother." He always knew more, Velen thought, more than he ever said. Knowledge that might have been useful, saved many, perhaps even Frentis, or Mikkel. "I'll talk to him," he promised Norta, "for we have much to discuss." "You're not going to do anything foolish today, are you?" Norta asked. "Foolish, brother?" "Yes, brother." Norta's face was stern. "Such as throwing yourself at an entire army? They can compose all the songs they like. It was still bloody silly. We have a home to return to, if you recall. The Order is behind us. There is something to live for now, someone to live for." There was an additional weight in his voice, and Velen knew his meaning well enough. Darenna had been at his side for most of the journey, except today, as he begged her to rest after her efforts to find their quarry. It was strange, but for all the time spent together, they spoke little, conversation seemingly unnecessary. He knew she could feel the absence of his song, and feared it would create a barrier between them. But she was more at ease with him now than ever before, and the reason was not hard to guess. Two souls meeting in the beyond, not a bond to be easily broken. For all the discomfort the realization brought, he remained grateful for her company, for it was only in her presence that the chill seemed to abate. It lurched anew now, a sudden ache deep inside, often making itself known when he rode for a long while, or engaged in any serious exertion. "No foolishness, brother," he told Norta, pulling his cloak tighter about his chest. "My word on it." His horse had belonged to a Northguard, and like most mounts bred in the reaches, was of Erhil's stock, tall, fleet, and of placid nature when not called to battle. Captain Adal said his former owner had been a man of great practicality and little sentiment, referring to the animal simply as horse, and Velen had yet to think of anything better. He felt the beast tense as they neared a hilltop in late afternoon, his nostrils flaring as they caught a scent too faint for Valin's nose, though he could guess its meaning, the sweat of many fearful men. They came into view as he crested the rise, the Nilsalian cavalry falling in on either side of him, spreading out as they reordered their ranks in preparation for the charge. Nilsalian cavalry were lightly armoured, and their horses bred for speed rather than strength, most riders armed with a 7-foot lance. They eyed the Valerians with set faces, devoid of mercy or fear. Word of the atrocity at Warnsclave had been quick to spread, and these men had already witnessed horrors aplenty on the march to Altor. The Valerians had formed battalions arranged into a square, ragged and twitching on the left, where Valin judged the free swords were placed, solid on the right, where the Varatai stood awaiting their fate with rigid indifference. Beyond them, the Airhill had cut off their line of retreat and were drawn up on flat ground, clustered into their war bands and moving forward at a slow walk. Off to the east, he could see the Northguard riding into position to seal any escape route, whilst Orvin's mounted guard drew up on the western flank. "At your command, my lord," the Nilsalian cavalry commander said, a wiry man with the typically villainous appearance of his fief's soldiery, shaven-headed and sporting fresh scars no doubt earned at Altor. In common with his men, Valin could see the man's eagerness to get at the enemy, the way his gloved hand clasped and unclasped the haft of his lance. "Wait for the Airhill," Valin told him. He reached over his shoulder and drew his sword, finding it strange that there was no comfort to be found in the feel of the handle. Where once it had felt like holding a living thing, now it was just a length of steel and wood, heavier than he recalled. A familiar hissing sound drew his attention back to the field, finding the air above the Valerians dark with arrows and the apogee of flight, the Airhill now boiling across the flat ground at full pelt. Valin raised his sword as the Nilsalian bugler sounded the signal to prepare for a charge, slashing down as the Airhill volley struck home.